Man, you guys, well, how was the week? Just hopeful. All right, that's good. Still feeling tired. I don't know about you guys, man. I was feeling like hurricane tired. So like if you were feeling it last week, we kind of came together and we were worshiping. And I think I was still kind of working off the adrenaline from the week before. And this week was just a crash, man. Just feeling tired and wore out. And if you follow it all, football, man, we had a good day yesterday. I was just praying for unity this morning, though, after last night's game with the Navy-Hawaii game, and just depending on kind of where you're at with that, you know, just praying that there would be unity among us, because really we're all on the same team, guys, in Jesus. But if you don't live in Hawaii like full-time, like long-term, you got to kind of give this one to us, even if you're rooting for Navy, because we don't get this that often. So we get like maybe like once a decade, we just have a hot streak, and we're in that right now and just enjoying that. So Hawaii won last night, which is great. We're two games in. We're feeling strong, which is good. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, sports ball, and it's good. So football game last night. Hawaii's doing good. We get to dive in today to a parable that's really practical, and I think this is great. We're beginning to wrap up our season in the parables, and so we've been working through this throughout the summer. We'll spend this morning and then next week in the parables of Jesus, and then Eric mentioned today, you know, we've got our launch Sunday coming up, and I would just say, man, prioritize that if you can be here. It's going to be a really great morning, but I'm excited for our fall season just to kick into gear, and it's one of the things we've been working toward and really praying toward, and fall just tends to be one of those times where we all start to kind of settle into a normal rhythm, and it tends to just be a really fun season and a really rich season, a good season for us as a church. And so I want to welcome you into that and just invite you to, man, take advantage of that. We're going to be beginning to move even into the fall, into the book of James from here, which is going to be really cool. And so it's going to be just a good time for us on Sundays. As we hit this parable this morning, we're again in the Gospel of Luke. And the truth is that this is a really practical, it's going to just sort of hit, it's going to touch down, I think, where we live, and we can work this week. This is one of those parables that just has very clear handles. It has very clear places for us to sort of cling to and to be able to lock it down into everyday life. But there is a lot going on in this parable, and so we'll kind of dig into it and unpack it a bit. But we see here that Jesus is teaching, and one of the desired outcomes when Jesus is teaching through parables is that he would begin to describe this life that's near or close to the kingdom of himself, of Jesus. And the picture that he paints is that this life of the kingdom, this life that follows Jesus, is a different life. And one of the ways that we're going to see that even in this parable he teaches today, but what we see is that Jesus calls us to this life that is, it's kind of this mix where on one hand, it's not what we typically think it should look like. And in a lot of ways, it's not in our nature. Like, it's different than what we would assume in our normal human heart. And on one hand, it is typically very refreshing. Like, the life of the kingdom actually exists for the peace of our soul. It's good for us. But we don't always think it's going to be that at the outset. But one of the things that we recognize is that it's typically very different than the rest of culture. And this was true 2,000 years ago. So Jesus is teaching this, again, 2,000 years ago. And what we would say is that he's calling his disciples, his 12 boys, very, very specifically to a different life. And it's going to be different than the world, different than the culture that they live in, and probably different for different reasons now, but it touches down the same for us, where it's going to present for us a different way to be and a different way to live and a different way to lead. And in some ways, it's for different reasons, but it's still different. Like, it still will call us to be unique and set apart from the rest of culture around us. One of the sort of commercials that you'll remember, no doubt, if you were alive and watching television in the 80s, probably like the 80s through the 90s, was a series of advertisements for Chevy trucks. And Chevy trucks used to have some of like the best advertising. Like, it was just good, man. And it would typically work like this, right? It was this picture, like, it was always just super rugged, right? And it was to advertise their pickup trucks. And Chevy trucks sort of garnished this reputation based off these commercials. Like they were just rough and rugged, right? But it would just show this pickup truck like out in the middle of nowhere and just rolling over rough terrain, right? Just going over rocks and getting just all like this and just climbing the top and then parking at the top of like this plateau and overlooking a massive valley. And all the while, this Chevy truck is just climbing, right? The gritty, gravelly, and just good voice of Bob Seger, right? You guys remember Bob Seger? Some of you guys do, yeah. So Bob Seger, right, comes out of Detroit, which is really good, and he just set the rock and roll and blues scene for Detroit. Still around, still influential, like even Kid Rock, dude, loves Bob Seger. Everybody loves Bob Seger. And it looks like a biker, you know? And Bob Seger just, he has this song, right? And it was like the tagline for Chevy for decades, but it was like a rock, right? It was so good. And so you see this like, this slow-mo picture of this pickup truck just climbing these hills, right? It was like a rock, right? And all automatically, like your heart is just gripped and you're like, man, I don't care. Like I'm 11 years old and all I wanna do is drive that pickup truck, right? Some of you ladies are just like, no, I'll take a hatchback. But most of the rest of us, right? We were like, dude, I wanna be there in that truck, right? Around the same time, man, Toyota actually had really great commercials. And Toyota's, again, theirs were kind of all around, but even for their pickup trucks were pretty legendary. Their whole deal was that their trucks would actually like work hard like for a lifetime, right? So their big thing used to be that kind of similar scene is set, right? Where the Toyota pickup truck would end up like on this sweet sort of hillside or the sweet plateau, like rugged terrain and territory. And the driver would get out and would hold up a sign that had the mileage, and it was always like somewhere over 100,000 miles. And the question, right, was like, where were you, like when your truck hit 100,000 miles? And so it would just show all of these scenes of different people that had driven there. And in some cases, like it's like this 2-decade-old pickup truck, right? It just looks like beat. But the idea was that this thing is just going to continue to work and work and work, right? And as gripping as those commercials were, the crazy thing is that they actually were a reflection of the way that we felt as a culture about work. There was something about the way that we pictured and envisioned what it means to work and work hard that was sort of displayed in those commercials. Because then when you'd watch them, inevitably, you're just sitting at home and you're just going like, man, yard work wouldn't even be a chore. Like, right? If I had that truck, like I could just take like trash can after trash can to the dump. Like it would be so good, right? But there was something that stirred in us that was actually a reflection. You see, culturally, we still really kind of believed in the idea that there's satisfaction in what? A job well done, yeah. The idea that like, man, when you work hard and when you do something well, we have this sense of satisfaction. And the interesting thing is that that's not necessarily like a value culturally that we hold to. And so we've kind of shifted even in that short time where our value for work is really different. So our value for work today actually has a lot more to do with work harder or work smarter, not, I gave it to you, harder, yeah. Work smarter, not harder, right? So we kind of have moved on past like work hard and feel satisfied and get it done, right? And like live in the grit. And we're kind of to the point where like we're going, yeah, but if you could just be smarter and more efficient, then you could get more, like, quicker and in greater abundance, right? And so our attitude toward even work culturally now has been shaped in a way where we just feel like, man, path of least resistance. Like, we're not as interested in working hard, and we're more interested in getting to the top. And in a lot of cases, we're kind of willing to take whatever means necessary. So if that means we take shortcuts, if that means we sort of stack the load onto other people, if that means we have to take advantage of situations sort of here and there and sort of compromise in order to climb the ladder and eventually succeed, we're willing to do that, right? It's interesting because that provides this really interesting climate where we go, man, there is a very big difference. You know, funny enough, man, Bob Seger actually mirrors the kingdom, but there's a bigger difference, right? A bigger gap in the way that we now see work and the culture of work. And what Jesus says is actually close to the heart of the kingdom. You see, a lot of times for us and where this parable will begin to touch down, we're actually required to slow down more than we feel comfortable slowing down. We're called to actually take things in smaller steps. That doesn't feel natural for us now. But it's one of the things that actually Jesus says is close to the heartbeat of the kingdom. That there's a value actually in investing in little ways and being faithful along the way, and that as we do that, what begins to take place is there is this sort of growth that happens in measure. It's not what we would expect, but it comes as the result of faithfulness. And so Jesus frames up this story for us, and like he always does, Jesus is this master of the heart, of the human heart. And so he's telling this story, and on one hand, he's going to give us just really practical stuff, and he's going to go, look, this is sort of how to be. Like, this is how to live a life that is lived close to the kingdom of God or in the kingdom of the kingdom of God and in the footsteps of Jesus. But he doesn't just leave it there. He actually unpacks the tangled up mess that the human heart becomes. He gets to the bottom of what actually drives us. And that's really, really helpful for us to hold on to, because those things tend to not change. So the way that we tend to be tangled up on a heart level humanly, and that remains consistent, the way that that will look and the way that that touches down, that tends to shift as culture moves. Jesus begins and he tells this story and he frames it up and he tells a story of a wealthy manager or a guy who has much. And the idea here is that this is somebody who's had a lot of success in life, and so he's got portfolios, he's got bank accounts, he's got investments, he's got property. And so he has to hire a manager to make sure that all of that stuff is sort of cared for and covered. And it's this picture that already we can start to see, like, we're going to go, man, we've either been in a situation like this, or we've been like next to somebody who's been in a situation like this, right? So here we have a manager, and this manager we would assume is going to be operating at a high level, but there's a problem because this manager hasn't been doing a very good job. And the parable doesn't necessarily suggest that he's being dishonest in that. He just hasn't been doing a good job. He's been wasteful in managing his boss's property and his investments. And so, you know, if you've spent any time like in the working world, like you get this. Or I can remember working jobs even in the service industry. I worked in restaurants for a long time. And I remember, you know, having friends who like in a given shift would like lose their cool and like blow up at a customer or something like that, you know? And at the end of their shift, right, what ends up happening, it's like, hey man, we gotta cut you loose. Like you can't yell at customers. Like that's not cool, you know. If you've ever seen Office Space, right, you know it's best to do that on a Friday, right? You wanna avoid kind of any unnecessary tension. But that is this scene. So here's a guy who's working for a living. He's working as a manager, and he's invested sort of all his stock there, but he's just not making the cut, and his boss needs to cut him loose. So when he called him and he said to him, what's this that I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be a manager. In other words, he says, look, you're going to have to turn in the books, man, but like I got nothing for you. Like this is not going well, and so we're going to have to move forward. We then see sort of the story pick up from here. And what we're going to see is that this is the parable, typically it's called the parable of either the dishonest manager or the parable of the dishonest steward, right? Which is an older word that we use for managing. And what we see is something like probably very familiar even in our own heart. But what the manager then begins to do is he begins to sort of work quickly to cover his bases. And this is where it begins to get very real. It starts to touch down. Okay, so this guy gets cut loose. He gets fired. The manager, so this is the guy that just got fired. He goes, man, what am I going to do? So he said to himself, right, what shall I do since my master is taking my job, my management away from me? And then he says this, and this is really helpful to see because this is going to sort of cast the direction for the whole parable. If you got a Bible, you can either highlight this, put a star by this, or if you've taken notes, you can write this down. The end part of verse 3, this says a lot. So this is the internal dialogue of the guy that just got fired, of the guy that just got cut loose, right? He says this, I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. So I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. In other words, what this guy says is, look, here's the deal. I'm too lazy to work hard. Like, I'm not willing to go out and actually work for a living. And the truth is, I'm too arrogant, I'm too prideful to admit that I need help, that I'm drowning here, and I'm gonna need people to come to my rescue. You see, that's a big, if you want to think about it like that, that is sort of a big pendulum swing here. But there is no doubt that all of us at some point are gonna find ourselves like on that spectrum somewhere. And it typically comes, I mean, it comes in the form of work. And so whether that's like you go to an office and you work, or whether you work from home, whether you have a team that you work with, whether you're over people in management and you're responsible to lead a whole crew, whether you're a business owner, whether you're at home and work for you legitimately, you're just going, man, I feel the pressure of wanting to be like the best mom or the best dad that I can be, and I feel like I don't measure up. The reality of just the nature of work is that humanly, like, we're going to find ourselves in that spectrum right there where we go, man, I feel like things aren't working out at some point, and I don't necessarily know how to move forward. And for this guy, he's going, look, this is a very honest sort of place that he's in. And he's just going, like, I'm not willing to do the physical work. So it doesn't take a lot of skill to dig, right? But it is hard work, right? I can attest to that. So we've got like this yard project that I've been doing for like a year at my house, right? And it is brutal. Like, it is just digging with a shovel and getting down into the clay and just moving earth. And it's hard. It's backbreaking. And it beats up your hands, right? But at the end of the day, like you can choose to get it done if you want to do it. The flip side, right, that this guy is sort of in the midst of, he just goes, man, the truth, though, is that I'm too ashamed to actually admit that I need rescue. And that's a really truthful place to be. Like, that hits home for a lot of us. And so you know this particularly, like, if you've ever been cut loose from a job. Like, that's a really, you feel bewildered when that happens, right? Or even if you feel like you sort of cut loose from a job that you had, like, you made the decision, then you sort of stepped out and you realized, like, now what, right? Or you stepped out and you realized, like, oh, man, it kind of isn't what I thought it was going to be. You're faced with sort of this tension, okay? So the tension is there, and I think that's really helpful to see. The interesting thing is to watch what this dishonest manager does with it, right? And this, again, tells us a ton about how we value work and how it actually plays, not just in the way that we live life, but how it plays on a deep level that touches down to our soul. So verse 4, the guy hatches a plan. So he goes, okay, here's how we're gonna go. He's got a plan. He's gonna get crafty, right? I've decided what to do so that when I'm removed from management, people may receive me into their houses. So we already know, like, okay, this is not gonna be good. So he already has decided, like, he's not gonna work for a living, and he's not gonna expressly ask people for help in the meantime. And so we just know, like, okay, he's got a plan, and he's going to go, okay, I need to know that I have a place to land once things sort of go south. This is his idea, verse 5 and following. So, summoning his master's debtors one by one, he said to the first, how much do you owe my master? The guy said, I owe 100 measures of oil. He said to him, well, take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, and how much do you owe? He said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said, take him your bill and write 80. Okay, so what he does is he hatches this plan and he says, okay, I'm going to get all of the guys that I know sort of work for my boss. So all of his clients, all of his vendors, all the guys that are sort of around. And the guys that sort of owe him, I'm going to get in between and I'm going to say, hey, just scratch off the list, like, what you actually owe, create a different record, make it for less, and then you owe me one. See how he works? He gets in the middle and just kind of works that slide. So he's going to go to the master's debtors, and he's going to say, hey, like, now you owe me one, and we're good, so why don't you give me a place to crash? The unique thing is we see this tension all the time, right? And so we see this, like, work in the working world where we, like, do little deals on the side. We see this kind of work out where we go, okay, I'm going to sort of create a system where either we're going to, like, sort of round off just fractions of a cent, right? We're going to create a system where we sort of are just dishonest in a little way, right? And we're going to sort of further our gains. And we either get loyalty from other people by doing that, right? Or we kind of create an avenue to quick success by doing that. And what Jesus would say is, look, there's something fundamentally flawed in that. And it's not just, I mean, it's, part of it is dishonesty, but it's not just that. We actually rob a part of the process. So this is where we go, okay, so the rhythm and the pace of the kingdom is different. It's just different. What we see is sort of this gap, this divide sort of emerge here. And for us, one of the places that this touches down just in the culture that we live in, Jesus sort of says, look, there is this here, this divide between what we would say is integrity on one side and ingenuity on the other. And those aren't necessarily always like opposed, but in the case of this story and where this guy is working, they are. In other words, there's something to be said for integrity and him going, okay, I got cut loose from a job, like I'm in need. So I either need to put my hand to the plow and I need to work hard until I get my stuff together, or I need to be willing to say, I need help. Like I need to go to people and say, hey, help me out here. He's not willing to do either of those and uphold good integrity. And so instead, he does this big old swing over to ingenuity, right? In other words, he's going to sort of be creative. And he goes, in creativity, I'm going to create a system or a way to sort of cut the corners. I'm going to sort of get around it. And in cutting the corners, he's like, man, I don't really care that this is going to sort of offload and undercut what my boss is owed, because it's going to further me. Crazy thing is that that actually describes how we value work culturally, right? So for us, we would say, man, there was probably a big shift, and even increasingly so, but it probably started like in the 90s, like late 90s, and has developed now where what we value, culturally speaking, even as we work, is we value the hustle, right? And so the hustle isn't bad. Like the hustle, if we're just talking in terms of pace and being able to work hard, the hustle isn't bad. The hustle's good. We would advocate that. We say, no, it's good. It's good to do that. But if you are a hustler, that's a different way of living. In other words, this guy's a hustler. So what he does is he comes on the scene and he goes, look, I'm going to figure out a way to get to the top. And I don't care who I have to put down, I'm going to get mine. So I'm going to rise to the top, right? So this is just Jay-Z. Here it is. So he's coming in, and this is the gospel of Jay-Z coming in, and he's just going to go, look, you can't knock the hustle. And what Jesus does is he topples the hustle, right? So Jesus comes over and just kicks it and goes, yeah, you missed it. So the fascinating thing is this guy wants to just advance and sort of run the ranks. And again, this is a human tension, right? Because we all have this desire for like success. We all want to, at some level, be good at what we do. We want to be sort of paid well, right? We want to know that we have some type of like credibility with people. We want people in relationships to think well of us. We want to be well thought of and well liked. I mean, there's a lot of pressures that kind of mix in with this, right? The fascinating thing is that this manager who got fired, his boss comes back on the scene and his reaction is different than what we would expect. We might think that he was going to get scolded. Like, we might think that the manager would say, like, how dare you leave, right? And he doesn't. It's unexpected, this response. And here's what's funny. This has confused scholars for generations. And what scholars have a hard time kind of figuring is this story is strange. It's weird. There's a lot going on here because the boss doesn't necessarily just condemn the guy for his poor behavior, but he actually acknowledges his. He acknowledges his skill. Check out verse 8. Here's what he says. So he says, the manager commended the dishonest manager, or the master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. Okay? In other words, he says, well, you're really skilled, man. Like, you've been super creative, and you worked it. Like, you worked the system, and you created an angle. Like, you created a way to sort of live without working. And to land, getting cut loose. But then check out what he says. Okay, this is Jesus speaking now. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. Okay, so again, that's huge in this passage. So if you want to highlight that, star that. What Jesus says is this. Look, the reality is that being skilled and being able to hustle your way to the top, like that requires a particular skill set, but that's not the end all. So what Jesus says is, look, there is this reality where you can climb to the top, shortcutting your way through, and you might find success. And if you've done that in a way that has actually like compromised either your integrity, or you've done that in a way that has cut others out in the process and done damage, you've created a way to the top, but what Jesus says is, great. Like, you've demonstrated a flawed way to be, and you've missed the process. Jesus says there's a difference in what it means to be innocent and what it means to actually have integrity and what it means to win at all costs. Difference there. And that difference is it's a kingdom divide. These ends stand on two opposite sides of the canyon. And what Jesus would call us into is actually a life lived near to the kingdom that is more intentional and more purposeful and loves others well. And as a result, feels the joy of success. Rather than clawing our way to the top, doing damage, cutting people out, compromising integrity along the way, and feeling the pressure of sitting at the top. Those are two different places to be. And see, we feel this pressure, like we feel this tension, I think, in great degrees. And I would say again, Jesus is here, and the backdrop is he's teaching his disciples kind of on the side. And so he's gone from this mixed crowd where he's got religious leaders, guys that want to sort of just check him out and see what he's teaching, what he's about. They're curious, guys that actually wanted in for him. They want to end his life. Jesus, in this particular scene, it's almost kind of like he's teaching his disciples directly just about leadership on the side. He kind of goes over, and the message is this. Look, when you guys are in the place where you're leading, understand that there are different sort of ways to achieve what you think is going to be success, and in the end, faithfulness matters. Faithfulness matters. But what he's going to suggest is that the steps that we would take to get there are oftentimes different than what we would prefer. And the way that touches down for us, again, this culture was a lot less fast-paced than the world that we live in. So in all reality, his disciples are not thinking like, oh man, you know, okay, I've got to put away my smartphone. Like, they're not thinking that, right? They're just going, okay, don't rip people off. Like, we need to not lie to people. We need to be honest in the accounts that we give, right? I think for us, we would say, okay, well, that's a given. We learned that like in third grade, and we would say that still holds. So you learn that in third grade, and then that continues on in your life. That's a given. But what we would say is that there are other things that land in our lap that we would say, man, the kingdom calls us to work in a way, get this, that allows work to be good and redemptive. See, we were built to work and to work well. And there's a process, actually, in the way that we work that runs really close to the kingdom that looks a whole lot like the way that Jesus is when we slow down enough to see it. So if you go back to Genesis, if you got your Bible, you can go to Genesis 3. Genesis 3 is incredible. It gives us this break, right? If you know the story of creation up to this point, God has created this world that's beautiful. It's perfect in every way. And he's created two people to live in the midst of it. And part of what goes with this world being perfect in every way is creation itself is perfect. And so it's beautiful, it's living, it's thriving. There's an abundance. Like, everything you need is there. And so for Adam and Eve who live in this, not only do they experience a world like that, but relationally, they're completely fulfilled. They don't have need relationally. Like, that need has been met both in each other and in their Father and in God. And so relationally, they have this world that's incredibly close to God, where they have like a closeness that we would say is an intimacy, a closeness in relationship with the one who's created them. And it's very beautiful. It's just good. And the interesting thing is that God sets the scene for creation. He tells Adam and Eve, and he says this, look, I've created everything here so good, and there's everything you need is there. The one thing I want you to avoid is that tree over there. And that tree, if you eat its fruit, is going to give you a perspective on life and a clarity in life that I've never intended you to have to know, right? And this is the knowledge of good and evil. You see, God's plan is that there is this beauty in innocence. There is this beauty, actually, in only knowing good. And what God says is that there is this incredible pressure. There is an incredible weight that comes with having to know, like, good and evil and the difference between that. And he goes, look, I've created this world for you just to enjoy. Just trust in me. It's beautiful and it's good. And you're going to be all good. Now, the human heart is fascinating, right? And so one of the things we see take place is that Adam and Eve, they disobey God. And in doing that, they're sort of duped into this lie that they can provide better for themselves, that maybe the God who has made them and created for them up to this point, who's provided for them up to this point, maybe he's not as good as he says he is. Maybe he's actually holding out on them, that there's blessings that they're missing, that if they could sort of just work for themselves, kind of grab a hold of that stuff that God said is off limits, maybe life is actually better on the other side. And so they disobey God, and in so doing, right, they bring for the first time sin and what we would say is selfishness into the world. The world has never known selfishness. It's never known disobedience with God. What ends up happening is this like ripple effect, right, where everything now is affected. And Adam and Eve had no idea that that was going to happen. Like everything gets affected. The earth gets affected. Creation gets affected. Work gets affected, right? And so the reality of what we now know work to be is actually set forward in Genesis 3, right? So this is God, and he's breaking it down for Adam. Check this out. So to Adam, chapter 3, verse 17, he said, "Listen, because you've listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it." Okay? In other words, what he says is, look, Adam, you were soft, man. Like, so your wife duped you into doing this stupid thing, and you didn't have a backbone. Like, you didn't say, no, we're not going to do that. And because you were a pushover and you gave in, and together you both disobeyed me, there are now effects. There are these repercussions. They're going to send like shockwaves. He said this, check this out. The first is that the ground is cursed. So he said, cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. So he says, look, the reality is that the ground, the earth, used to be completely good. It was abundant and wonderful. Now it carries the curse of death. So now even the trees that have provided for you that you've known only to be life-giving are going to have seasons of death. Now, for the first time, you're going to see that there is a whole season in the calendar year where things dry up and they shrivel and the leaves fall. And what you visually have to understand now is decay. There's death in the world now. Isn't that crazy? For the first time ever, there's going to be fruit and it just falls off and rots. You've never known that before. But now you're going to see that just tangibly that there's death in the world. There's an end. There's a life cycle. See, they never knew that before. Hear how he describes it, though. It's crazy because what he says of work is he says this. Look, in pain, you shall eat of it all the days of your life. So there's something in the way now you're going to even labor to eat where there's going to be pain involved in that, okay? He continues. And again, the language that is used here is just, it's like, it's really poetic and it fills in just a lot of angles for us. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. In other words, you're going to have to work hard, and you're going to take cracks along the way. Like, you're going to get scratched up, and it's going to be difficult. Work is going to feel painful. Now, work is going to provide for you. So you're going to be fed, and you're going to be cared for, but you're going to put sweat equity into it, and there's going to be pain involved in that. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, until you return to the ground, okay? For out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to the dust you shall return. Heavy, right? So what Adam is confronted with is this reality that life looks different now and work looks different. Work is now painful, and it still provides, and it's still good. You see, Adam and Eve originally had this killer job description, and it was completely fulfilling. So God put them to work, and work was really good. Work wasn't a drag, right? Mondays weren't sad. Like, so they would go to work and they'd be like, this is the best. We're the most fulfilled. They got to name the animals and they got to work in conjunction with God who creates. And they're like, this is the best thing. This is what we were created for. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, man, they feel the weight of a work day. They feel the heat of the sun. They got to sweat it out. And Adam's having to work the ground, and the ground is difficult and it's hard. And now for the first time, he's affected by the elements, right? And kind of all this crazy stuff that now shapes work. And what we would say is what this does is it doesn't make work bad. Work is still good. Like, work's still a good thing. But it makes it painful. It makes it difficult. It means there's toil there. Now, we know this to be true in any sphere of how we work, right? So whether we're actually working physically and we're laboring, right? You put in like one of those really long, just gnarly, good old Hawaii in the summer yard work days, right? You start at 8 a.m., you wrap it up by 9:30, you're done, right? maybe you're working that way like all week and you're just going, man, it is hard work, right? You know that to be true. There is something redemptive there, though, and this is the creator in you. Check this out. There's something redemptive that even after a long day where you feel the pain and you feel like, man, your body's tired, you sit down on the couch at the end of the day and you're like, phew, there's something that feels satisfying about that. There's something that feels good. You feel poured out at the end of the day, but it feels good. You see, that's the creator in you. You've been made to work, and work is good, but you feel the pain and the exhaustion of it. And that's the ripple effect of sin in the world. What we would say, though, is that there is a process in that that is actually beautiful. And it's a kingdom process. That's to say this, that Jesus comes on the scene and he creates a new way to be that presses us, spiritually speaking, into this way where we see the way that Jesus is in all of life, even in the way that we work. And we would say that it's near the kingdom, it's close to the kingdom. We see the presence of Jesus when we work in a way that's faithful. We see the presence and we're near, we're close to Jesus when we put in the work and when we feel the exhaustion and we sweat it out. But when we work well and we do that to the glory. You see, the same cannot be said if we're on the other side and we go, man, I just want to work smarter, not harder. Because what we say then, and again, I'm going to say this, like working smarter, not harder is great for organizations. Like, that's awesome. So don't throw that out with the bathwater here. So that is great if you're organizing your calendar and you're organizing your life and you're going to like start to plan. Maybe you've not done that before. That's good. Work smarter, not harder. But if you're in a place where you just go, man, I really think like the motto for my life, like my mantra, my way to be is just work smarter, not harder. That's a terrible mantra to have in life. Because what that means is you're going to cut people out at every corner you can because people are inefficient. Other people are inefficient. They come with problems and hang-ups. They come with issues and inconveniences. But the reality is that Jesus will bring us back to this place, again, close to the kingdom, where he will say, guess what, though? There's something beautifully redemptive in the way that we work that calls us to bless other people. See, this is the model that Jesus lives out as he lives and as he serves. He pours his life out. And so what he begins to introduce, Jesus kind of gives us like three very clear application points. And so we can take any of these this week and run at it, right? And we'll hit them real quick. And any of these work, it's great. It's true. All of them are true. But what Jesus introduces, again, is a principle that we know is true. We've seen it work. But we don't always believe it because it feels inconvenient. You know you've seen this if you have ever worked for a boss or for a leader who is incredibly good and has built you up and allowed you to grow and thrive. Those guys typically are very successful at the top. You know this if you've ever been involved in a team where you've had an incredible coach that has spent long hours doing little tasks with you in order to bring you to where you need to be. Those are typically the guys that are very, very successful. We see examples like Coach John Wooden, right? He coached legends. He coached UCLA basketball for years. JD got to go to John Wooden's house and meet him before he died, which is kind of cool. He shook his hand. So if you want afterward, you give me $5, I'll let you shake JD's hand because one time he shook John Wooden's hand. But Coach Wooden was legendary, right? So he ushered in, I mean, coached champions that would change the NBA. And you know what he did with all of the guys he coached at a college level? These are grown men. The first lesson was like, sit down, I'm going to teach you how to tie your shoes. Literally, this is how we tie our shoes. Like, no task was too small. There was an investment. There was a willingness for him to pour out his life. And the fascinating thing we see, and there's this great image, later in his life, I think it's with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who's like at this point, probably old and retired. John Wooden is barely able to walk, and you see him holding his hand. It's beautiful. And you see Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, like, who has been risen to success as a result of being coached by Coach Wooden, and is holding his hand, walking him across the court. Amazing, right? See, this is a kingdom principle. We know this to be true. We've seen it in our culture, but it requires us to slow down and to see it at play. Here's where Jesus goes with this. He says, one who is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much. Okay? One who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, which the idea there is not dishonest wealth, but it's just like worldly wealth, worldly possessions, just stuff. Like how you manage your stuff, how you manage your money, like that matters, right? And Jesus says, look, it starts small with how you manage all the things that God's given you. If you've not been faithful in that, he says this, who will entrust you to the true riches? In other words, there is an element of responsibility here where how are you going to be entrusted with more in the kingdom if you're being dishonest at every corner and if you feel like, man, the biggest drive is like, I'm going to get mine and I'm going to rise to the top. You see, the reality is that whether you're a Christian or not, that principle holds true, right? You want to be honest in the things you do. It starts in the little things. Tends to be the case that like the way you start, right, is the way you finish, right? You've heard that. Being able to be faithful in the little things generally means that when the pressure's on and when the heat is on and the bigger things, you don't crack. Like you've set a foundation and you're faithful and you're going, okay, I've got this. Here's what we would say though, and I'm going to talk to you Christians. Man, it is easy to believe the opposite is true. And again, part of being unique and close to the kingdom, I just want you to hear this, is that it means you're going to live differently. And sometimes even amongst Christians, that means you're going to look different because you're going, look, I want to intentionally live in the ways of Jesus. I can't tell you how many times I've heard preached from pulpits in churches this idea of like quick success and what God wants to do is sort of bless you, that the thing he cares most about you in life is that you're successful in all things. God wants to fulfill all the sort of dreams that you have and he wants to just take you to the top. The hard part is I can't tell you how many Christians I've met who aren't living that life and they're struggling to be faithful and they feel like they're doing something wrong. Can I just tell you something that just shatters that? So as much as we love to hear the idea that like success is the biggest thing and all God wants us to do is believe to achieve and whatever else, Jesus is teaching here and he's homeless. And here's homeless Jesus and he's teaching to his 12 closest friends and one of them is going to sell him out completely, right? Like so Jesus is living in this reality that's just very, very different. It's very unique. And so for what that means for us is, look, he calls us to this particular pace and this particular rhythm of the kingdom and it looks different. But here's what I want to tell you. It's not wasted. It's not wasted. There's something beautifully good about it. Not only because it allows us to invest in others and invest in the future in a way that's faithful, that honors God, that gives us the ability to see others succeed and do well. But the flip is that, look, it is incredibly good for our soul when we live in this way. Like you feel fulfilled and good. There's something really deceptive about success when we chase it. And that's success in a lot of different forms. So for you, and it's different for each of us, right? So for you, if the big thing on your radar is like success in your job or in your work, and you just feel like, man, that's the thing you're chasing, is to be the most successful, to be the top of your field, top of the game. Maybe for you, just it's more concrete than that, and it's money, and you go, I have this goal that I want to be here by this age or whatever, and this is what I'm chasing. Whatever that looks like. The difficult part about success and the deceptive thing, man, is it's a terrible God, right? So what happens is you feel inspired and you chase this thing up the ladder rungs and you feel this constant weight of pressure. And what happens, right, is if you get successful and you sort of climb this ladder, you start feeling good, man, you feel good when you sort of climb to the next level or that next step, but only for a short amount of time, right? And then what happens? Like you dip into success and you feel like, oh man, I hit this goal, that's cool. And now you're on to the next. And guess what just happened to that pressure? That thing just got heavier on you, right? Because your world is centered around sort of making it. Here's what Jesus would say. He lands this in a place where he gets at the heart of the matter, right? He says, look, no servant can serve two masters. Truth of it, he'll either hate one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. This is true of anything, right? So any of the stuff that we chase, and again, understand this, Jesus in this parable is not condemning money. He's not really condemning success either, because the guy that's pictured in the story is a guy who has all the wealth, right? He's a wealthy guy, and he's just said, look, manage my money well. Like, so that's not the issue. That's a neutral. But it becomes really easy for us to take the good things and the blessings that God gives us, and we turn those into gods. We turn those into things that we worship. Like, we chase it, and we just decide, man, this is going to be the thing. Like, this is going to either make me happy, this is going to make me fulfilled. And so that principle applies where Jesus just goes, look, the reality of the human heart is you get all tangled if you try to, like, worship multiple things. Like, God is the only one that can have that. And when you have the ability to relinquish and to just release and go, okay, look, success is not a bad thing. It's just not the only thing. Sometimes God teaches us through failure, and that's good. That's good for us, right? Enjoying life and having a fulfilled life and being blessed, that's not a bad thing. That's a really, really good thing. But sometimes God teaches us through suffering. And so what Jesus says is, look, if you can relinquish the control of this and hold this with an open hand and worship God first, like, and allow him to be the one that you focus on, this incredible weight and pressure that you feel trying to climb the rungs of that ladder are lifted. And it's a different life. It immediately becomes, like, enjoyable and fulfilling. And there tends to be this sort of domino effect that emerges where the more you bless other people, like, the more you pour out your life for others. Because, man, to be honest, I can remember the first time somebody had mentioned this to me. I just go, well, yeah, it's kind of how Jesus leads and lives his life. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not Jesus. Like, that's why Jesus is Jesus. And they're like, no. Look, he calls us to this life, like, where we pour out our life for other people. We serve. And I'm like, that sounds like the least fun ever. I don't want to do that. That sounds like it's a burden. So honestly, like, you might be at a place where you're hearing that and you go, like, yeah, that doesn't sound good. And I just want to say that's okay. But I want to tell you something, that from the other side, what you don't know is that there is this domino effect that when you pour your life out and you serve other people and you lead in that way, it's infectious. Like, it becomes enjoyable in a way that you can't explain. It's fun to bless others. Like, it's fun to serve others. It's fun to start your working day and to go, man, how can I build up other people around me so that they succeed and so I do my job well? Like, how can I start this and not look out for myself going, look, the main interest here is I'm going to get mine. No, the cool thing is if you can start your work and go, how can I allow this to be a demonstration of Jesus and his goodness in practical ways in the way that I work, trusting that he's going to care for you, Jesus is going to provide for you, he'll give you what you need. The crazy thing is that there is this domino effect where that becomes really enjoyable, actually. So not only is it a huge pressure or stress relief, but there's a lot of joy in that life. Here's what Jesus does, and he touches it down very specifically for this passage. And we almost get the idea, because again, he's teaching his disciples here to the side, and you almost get the idea that this is the moment where he's going to throw his voice back over to the religious leaders. He goes, right? Or maybe just to Judas, who's in the corner, right? He goes, look, you can't serve God and money, right? And so the reality is that those two stand opposed. Like, you can't, the human heart can't manage two gods that they worship. We find ourselves tangled. We find ourselves dissatisfied. The truth of it is we find ourselves in a place where we become self-consumed, right, when we do that. So Jesus lays out this way to live that's unique. It's different. And what we would say is that it's different for us. And so even today, it means that, man, the people who work in the way that displays the kingdom, right, who slow down long enough to do things, to be faithful in the little things, who slow down long enough to say, no, I want to do my best to just have integrity in all of what I do. And in the areas where I don't, or the areas where I misstep, the areas where I kind of blow it, I'm going to make that right. Because I want people to know that matters. Like, that's a distinctly different working world than the world of working just to get to the top at any cost. But what we see here is it's a way better way to live. Not only for those around us, but also for the care of our own soul. We're going to worship today by way of response. And here's what we want to do. We'll sing some songs that draw us to Jesus and his presence, his goodness. We're going to open up the table. As we do that, if you're a follower of Jesus, this table is for you this morning. We do this as we worship. We remember that Jesus is enough. And I just want to say this. If you are in here this morning and maybe you feel like, man, I feel beat up. Like you just feel tired. Like you're working hard and you feel like you're bearing a burden, or you feel like you're carrying just a ton right now. I want to invite you to come to the table and just to let Jesus be enough. Would you be reminded this morning that the world is not up to you, but that your Heavenly Father holds the world? Would you be reminded and would you be comforted that Jesus has secured this relationship with your Heavenly Father? That your responsibility, even in work, is to be faithful with what he's put in front of you. To go, okay, be faithful. Do that well. And would you allow God to be God? Would you let that pressure release? If for you this morning, you're not a Christian, maybe you're kind of on the fence, you're like, I don't really know that I believe this Jesus thing, but you're kind of listening and you're figuring it out. Here's what I would say is, it's not that different for you either. What I would say is, man, there is this way to live and be that I'll just tell you allows us to be free. And it's unique. It looks different than the rest of the world. But, man, it is good for those around us, and it's good for us and our family. And I want to kind of invite you to think about it. I want to invite you to process that through. And for you, you may be at a place where you just go, man, I want to surrender to that. Like I want that life. Like whatever I'm doing to sort of manage my own way right now feels heavy and it's not good. I want to invite you to let that go. And if for you, you're interested in what it looks like to follow Jesus, I'd love to have a conversation with you. I'd love to talk about that more. But even for you to be welcomed back to this place where you realize, man, there's a Father in heaven who, he loves you. And the good news that we hear in the gospel, like let this just be good news to your soul this morning, is that he holds all things. There's nothing outside of his care or control. That is an incredibly good, good reminder. Here we have Jesus who has secured our role in the family. He's brought us into his family through his atoning death on the cross, through his resurrection. So not only has he given us new life, but Jesus has brought us into the family and he's just said, look, you're here. I'm your advocate. I'm for you. And I don't know about you, but like particularly for the weeks that I feel like I'm either struggling to do well, the weeks that I feel like I'm either not doing a good job as a dad, not doing a good job as a husband, not doing a good job like as a pastor, I just feel like, man, whatever. It's an incredibly comforting thing to be reminded that Jesus is my advocate. That doesn't change. He's called me to be faithful and to walk forward, to keep my eye on him, to give my life. And as I do that, he assures us that we're going to continue to watch his kingdom grow and move. It's good news. We're going to pray together, and then we'll respond by singing together. Why don't you stand with me, and we'll spend a little bit of time praying.